1340 WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show. Your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. We're about to get into football. I'm going to speak with Ed Marlowe here in just a moment. We have OVC Football Media Day coming up Monday. And this is the 19th day of July, which means that 1 month from today, virtually all the high schools, if they play in week zero, will have played one game already, or will be playing the night of the 19th, which would be a Saturday. So that's how close we are to football season. Teams are already out there on the field. And I know you have some guys, and you'll be following some of the teams in the region as they get ready for their season, because they're already out there battling the heat as they get ready for the football season.
Yeah, absolutely, Neil. As a matter of fact, pretty much since KHSAA dead period has ended, a lot of teams really have hit the ground running. It's such a cliche way to put it, but it's true. You have a lot of teams that have really, I think 7-on-7 is starting to really become, and I say this, it's been around forever.
Yeah.
7-on-7 has been a really good way for teams to just completely analyze where their skill guys and where their offensive guys are kind of looking. Heading into the season, it's a good way to see, you know, the base skeleton of your defense,
right,
the base skeleton of your offense. Pretty bland in some respects, but then in other respects, it can be extremely eye-opening. You know, how much timing does your quarterback and your receivers have? How well do your defenders play off the ball and against, you know, the pass and against any sort of running attack? So it's just one of those situations where next 2 to 3 weeks, teams will be very engaged in 7-on-7, and of course, battling heat advisories this week and next week, practicing really early in the morning or really late at night. I think our reporter, high school reporter Al Willman, was at Tillman's practice on Tuesday night. They practiced in the rain from 5:30 to 8:30, but then he was out at Marshall County's practice this morning, Wednesday, from 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning. So it's, just whenever you can get a practice in,
yeah,
as safely as possible. But that's the next 3 weeks of football leading up to week zero, is early morning practice, late night practice, and 7-on-7 until you get your team ready.
Well, it'll be fun. We'll start to see stories develop, at least at the high school level, over the next few weeks. We've had a few coaching stories developed, including one this week for softball at Marshall County. They're going to have another coaching change there. That's a bunch they've had at Marshall County.
It is, and you do kind of start to raise some eyebrows, and you wonder kind of what's going on. But it's, as I've talked about with several coaches in the region, both some with some staying power and new faces, this is a summer of change. And, you know, and as careers start to develop, and you start really wondering where your next path is going to go, it starts with this summer. You
right.
Take a look at this summer, and 10 years from now, I think you're going to look back and you're going to see there was a plethora of change. Trent Lovett, superintendent at Marshall County, who sits on the board of controls with the KHSAA and all of its sporting knowledge, he just decided that after 2 years as softball head coach that, you know, he had to devote more time to his superintendent position.
Right.
Spoke with him on the phone Tuesday afternoon regarding the face mask issue that we may talk about. And he said it was just one of those situations where he just really, in his mind, he wasn't giving enough time to his team. 2 years ago, this is a team that made the regional championship, or the fourth district champions last year. Tougher schedule. They went 17-16. And I think he just wanted to cede his position to someone who's going to be able to devote more energy to it.
Right.
And so I have to commend that. I mean, as a superintendent, you're in a really kind of unique position there, because technically he fired himself.
Wow.
I mean, if you think about it,
right,
I mean,
I don't mean that
like that sounds.
I understand.
It's not trying to be disrespectful at all, but Trent Lovett decided to take a step back without someone else telling him he had to take a step back.
Right.
I mean, he made the decision. This needs to go to somebody who can devote more time to it. And so, you know, that's a softball team in coming years that's going to be bringing up a wealth of young talent, could possibly make a run at a regional title here in a little while. I don't know how long that'll be. We know how good McCracken softball is, and the talent they have coming up
is, I'm
going to use the word unceasing. They will forever have, in my opinion, a talented team at several positions. But, You know, you take a look at that situation in Marshall County. They've got a couple really good feeder programs, some really good middle school programs that are bringing up younger talent, and we'll see how it shakes out. But that is certainly a job that if I'm a young and upcoming coach in the softball world of Kentucky, I would want that job at Marshall County. Even if you did have to contend with McCracken County every year, it doesn't matter. That should be a coveted job.
A couple of other coaching moves at the assistance level, and that is Callaway County. Both of these, actually, Callaway County. I know on the boys' side, they announced Brad Cleaver was the new head coach, and he has a very familiar assistant coach he's added to his staff.
Absolutely. Bruce Lane, 123-88 in his time at Callaway County, longtime assistant under Terry Birdsong, longtime Laker. Yep. He's been in their school system in some form or fashion for 19 years, and this is a guy that certainly knows boys basketball back and front at Callaway County and a lot of other programs. Former Hickman County star, I keep hearing the legend. Apparently, he put up 2,000 points at Hickman County. I don't know. I'd love to go back and see some of those old records, but
not in one game, though.
Right? Yeah, okay. Well, not in one game. Absolutely, two games. So it was a two game sweep of who knows, but. But you're looking at a lot of experience now. You've got the sure. former player as the head coach and the former coach as your top assistant. I think that certainly bodes well for Callaway County basketball in the coming years. I know that there was a little bit of I don't necessarily even want to say frustration, but a little bit of strain when Terry Birdsong took that job over at Marshall County. You had some Callaway fans certainly respect Terry Birdsong and his decision, but we're very excited about the possibility of him sticking around a little bit longer.
Sure.
He gave them a lot of quality years and in two different stints. Now he's taking that job at Marshall County. So Callaway, in some respects, when that happened, I'm sure we're thinking, oh, here we go again. We don't have any stability at head coach. What are we going to do? I think this is a home run decision when you have Brad Cleaver and now Bruce Lane. You've got a lot of stability, and you go right back to being contenders in the 4th District. So we'll see. This next year, they've got some talent, and you just wonder how – I mean, the 4th District's always tough anyways because now Murray has Dior Curtis,
yeah,
who we've already talked about. And so now all of a sudden you've got a lot of stability in the 4th District when a month and a half ago we didn't know which way was up and which way was down.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't write the name down. Hopefully you can bail me out on this, but Valerie Chilton also hiring a former head coach as one of her assistants. Is that right?
I think it's Kirsten Collins.
From
Hickman County. I believe that's right. Hickman County, at one point, that was Alexis Burpo territory. You know, was from there. She was kind of their up and coming star before her and her family decided to transfer to Murray. But, you know, I don't know how much Collins had to deal with that staff, but over the last couple of years, I think they went 9-26 the last couple of years, something right. like that. I'd have to check some of those stats, but it's tough to win in the first district because, if you're not going to beat Carlisle, you know, then you have to really battle with Fulton County and Fulton City. And in the first district, they're as athletic as they come, mm-hmm. just like Carlisle, and that's always a dogfight in the river counties. And so, that's a good addition. Valerie is looking for, some consistency and some youth, and that definitely is going to help her out.
Big news, of course, at the high school level yesterday, and I think this actually happened Friday or Saturday, but the KHSAA making the announcement yesterday about the mask rule for first baseman, third baseman, and pitchers, which they will all be required to wear a mask beginning with the next softball season. That'll likely be implemented at the middle school level, although that isn't official at this point. But the takeaway there is, and I did see people talking about it on social media, all right, you did it for softball. Why didn't you do it for baseball? What kind of message are you sending? And there is some controversy in that standpoint. But in terms of the safety issue, I did see a quote from someone with the KHSA. It may have been Julian Tackett. It may not have been, who said they wanted to be proactive rather than reactive. Oh, someone got their face crushed in. Now let's get the mask. And I do understand that standpoint.
You take a look at the Union County pitcher. That's where a lot of it's coming from. Mm-hmm. Three players in the second region, had injuries last year. As a matter of fact, Lexi Miller, Marshall County ended up lining a pitch off of a Christian County pitcher last year. Mm-hmm. She had a face mask on and still chipped a couple of her teeth.
Wow.
So you're talking about a situation where the game, in my opinion, and I thought about writing a column about this, but I don't know why. I may continue to think about it and talk to coaches and players. There's a bigger call for overall safety. So while the mask for third baseman, first baseman, and pitchers, a lot of pitchers are already wearing them. And you have some third baseman and first baseman who opt to choose to do so. I think where some people are even drawing back on this, it's not that they're against safety. They're against not having a choice, I think, is where a lot of this line is trying to be drawn from coaches. I mean, the line's drawn. KHSAA has made it a mandate.
Yeah.
Your kids will be wearing masks at the hot corners and at pitcher. That being said, I think it has also spurred the conversation of other types of safety for the game. This is a game that the softball in Kentucky is continuing to flourish, is continuing to grow. And you're taking a look at a situation where now all of a sudden, if masks are the question, now you have pitch counts. Where's the pitch count? You know, I mean, you and I talked about this. There were three pitchers at the state tournament this year that threw over 400 pitches in a two-day period. A couple of them won through four games and 400 pitches. So they're hoping that this mask issue helps open up other avenues of safety revolving girls softball.
Was that unsafe, though? Have those girls been to doctors? Have they complained? I mean, if it's not an issue, I don't understand why move to make an issue out of it.
Well, you have had girls. That's a great question. You have had. I don't necessarily know if girls have so much complained about it because they've gone out and still done their job, but how much damage is it actually doing to their shoulders? I think Eric Frederick at Murray State would be the first. He's commented on it.
But, I mean, is it doing it? You have to at least be able to prove it.
I don't want to speak for Efred, but I know at some point Efred got up in that conversation with softball pitching and said that, yes, this is doing long-term damage.
Cool. We need to bring him in, and I'd
love to have some longitudinal discussion regarding it, because when you're talking about a career, take a look at Callaway's Lincoln Kelso. This is a girl that's been pitching almost every game for Callaway since her eighth grade year. She'd be the first person to tell you her shoulder's done. She probably could have gone and played at the next level. And I'm not saying her shoulder's, like, done. I think she's going to be able to, like, raise her children high into the sun and lift things and put them on shelves.
But it was because of pitching that did this to her.
Just that rotator cuff.
Gotcha.
I mean, the mechanism required for girls softball to throw it that fast and that effectively is just unbelievable, the amount of torque required. I'm usually in awe. I mean, you see these girls at the high school level that are aces that go on to play for Kentucky and Alabama and whatnot. Even the girls that go on to play for Kentucky Wesleyan and Bethel and John A. Logan. You're throwing 55, 60 miles an hour underhanded. I just can't. Like, I've tried to do it. Like, I can't imagine making that step, you're throwing your whole shoulder around. What kind of damage that's doing. And so, you know, I'm not saying change the mechanism. I'm just saying there is a pitch count. And high school baseball just implemented the pitch count not that long ago. So I think the mask issue has brought about a major discussion of, okay, well, what other safety mechanisms now should we implement? Because like I said, in my opinion, I think softball in Kentucky at the high school level is a very explosive sport. You're sending a lot of young women to college to get educations based on softball skill. And it's a sport, I mean, you can tell by the World Series, you can tell by the Super Regionals this last year.
Right.
It's growing. People are watching it. They're enthralled by it. It's a fast, aggressive sport that really gets crowds motivated when something happens. Mm-hmm. And young girls are now a part of it. How can we play this game in a safer way? I don't know. It's a great discussion. In my opinion, the whole mask issue is tough for me because I see a lot of third baseman and first baseman play just fine who think it may be a hindrance. You know, it may be something that kind of keeps them from catching fly balls and tough grounders. But in the same respect, you look at Evan Hendrickson, who was that pitcher at Union County who took a fastball to her orbital socket, a hard hit ball, and it was considerable damage. I mean, she had a tripod fracture.
Man.
She had to have a metal plate put in. She was able to luckily pitch in her district tournament. And it go on to Kentucky. She's going to go on and play at Kentucky Wesleyan. But I mean something that, you know, and Trent Lovett, as we just talked about, I talked to him yesterday about this. He sits on the board of controls.
Right.
He's there as this vote's going down. And, you know, he said the biggest problem that he's 100% for it, by the way. And he said the biggest problem that KHSAA sees is that leaving this responsibility in the hands of the parents and the kids, KHSAA wanted to be proactive. This Kentucky's the first state to ever mandate this.
Yeah.
They are the leader now in player safety. So now, while coaches agree that the hot corners are a tough place to play, the main thing they want now is to continue to see the safety enforced. That means let's get on the pitch count level. Let's not have four games over a 48-hour period in the dead heat of the summer when our girls are literally just...
Totally
gassed.
Agree with that.
Let's spread the tournament out. Oh, and let's also make our fields bigger. Let's make them a different regulation because our girls are running up against fences and, you know, having a hard time. Girls are just better at sports now. And I don't mean that from a misogynistic standpoint. I mean that from a skill standpoint. You have very talented young women in this state and a lot of other states who are turning on softballs. They are homering at a higher rate. They're stronger. They're quicker. They're faster. That's just life. They've just gotten better at a game that over the last 20 years has really developed into an excellent, in my opinion, an excellent sport.
Yeah, and the I can go back to my generation in previous, because that's where the old throw like a girl, shoot like a girl came from. And the reason that it developed was 100% okay, and I'll tell you why it was. Because I was in high school when they brought back girls basketball.
Right.
And when I first saw what that product was, it was horrendous. Horrendous. Because you had girls who couldn't dribble, couldn't shoot, couldn't dribble, couldn't do anything. And the reason you did, no one ever worked with them.
Yeah.
There's no reason to. Now, you don't see that. There is no throw like a girl. If you throw bad, you throw bad. It's not like a girl. If you shoot bad, you shoot bad. Don't shoot like a girl because they've been worked with since they were little kids. They have the same opportunities everyone else does. They can get scholarships. I mean, I have a granddaughter. It's 10. Her throwing form's better than the two grandsons. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah.
And there is no throw like a girl or hit like a girl. For her level, she hits as well as they do.
Yeah.
So back when those sayings used to be around, that's the reason. No one had worked with them. It wasn't because they were girls, because no one had worked with them. Now you see that they're athletic. They have a chance to shine, and it kind of hacks me off when I hear it now.
Yeah.
But 35, 40 years ago, it was rooted in fact. To be honest about it.
Well, and it's an excellent context. We are just in a different time. If
yeah.
somebody told me I shot like a girl, I would love to hear that because I'd love to shoot like Macy Turley.
Yeah, I'd take that.
I'd love to shoot like Graves County's Lindy Qualls or McCracken County's Mackenzie Blackford. Or if somebody told me I hit like a girl, I'll be like, yeah, I wish I hit like McCracken County's Abby Shoulders.
Yeah.
Or former Marshall County catcher Abby Fiesinger. I wish I hit 500 and turned
right.
on a 70 mile an hour curveball. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no moniker anymore.
No.
There is no, you know, oh, you throw like a girl. Okay. That's funny in the Sandlot
mm-hmm.
because that movie came out 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm getting old.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, you know, that's fine. That's funny. That's humorous because 20 years ago, maybe that's the case. This year, I wish I threw like East Carter's Montana Fouts,
yeah.
who, by the way, has a microbial 0.3 ERA as Gatorade Player of the Year and is going to Alabama because she throws 77 mile an hour fastballs and hits 20 homers a season. Like, I mean, I wish I played that way. I'm just not. The Lord did not give me those skills.
Exactly.
These young women who play this softball game and want to be safe were given those skills. Now they're being given the tools to be safe.
All right. The reason we haven't talked a lot, there's really not been a lot going on Murray State-wise. That will change, and next week is Murray State, excuse me, is OVC Football Media Day. We'll find out where Murray State will be picked in the media poll. plus the coaches / SID poll. So that's getting set to really dominate conversation beginning next week. I know you have written a story about Murray State football and the quarterback battle, which will not be settled most likely until it may be late fall when it's as far as the fall practice session goes when it's settled, or it might be early. I'm not sure. What did you find out?
Well, talking to Mitch Stewart, it's one of those situations where you take a look at their opportunity to choose a starting quarterback, and it's just a little bit more wide open. And I know a lot of people think that that might be a bad sign, and maybe in some ways it is. But from my perspective, from a talent standpoint, there's certainly a number of guys that can win games for this team. You just have to choose the one. And from Mitch's own mouth, this is literally the first time in his 8-year career, both as a coordinator and as a head coach, that there's a true battle on their hands. They've got two or three guys that can really take the reins if they so choose. If they come in the fall, show that they've absorbed the playbook, can minimize mistakes, bounce back from interceptions and fumbles, and continue to move the offense in an efficient way, the job could be theirs. And it's a different amount of guys. It's younger guys. It's older guys. It's middle-class guys that, you know, have been around 2 years, 4 years, and 10 minutes, you know, that have a chance here. So on this roster, you only have one start in a Racer uniform, and that's Cameron Burst from last season,
right,
the SIU game. Outside of that, who has game experience? Shuler Bentley has some from Old Dominion. You know, obviously, Burst does from Murray State and his time at Arkansas State. And then outside of that, it's a lot of practice reps. And Mitch said basically that it's a wide-open conversation and that they will quickly taper it down, starting with the veterans. You know, if they don't pick it up in this fall camp early, you know, we're saying probably 2 to 3 weeks. I don't want to put a timetable on it. I'm not a head coach. I'm not a coordinator. I'm not going to be making those decisions. But once that decision's made, I think they'll cut the cord on projects A and B and move to younger options C, D, E, and F. And it's, you know, to have that many quarterbacks at your disposal, I think is a blessing. To have to make that decision, I wouldn't want to make that decision at all. I mean, because they're certainly, like I said, I believe, and this is just me, there's more than one guy that's capable of motoring that offense. When you have guys like Demetri Johnson, Jordan Gandy, Jonathan Moss, you know, Feggins, LJ Gainey, whoever else they decide to throw out there at the wideout position, plus the possibility of multiple running backs, I don't want to say quarterback's not important because it's very important, but if you can just get a guy out there that's going to minimize mistakes and not turn the ball over, I think the Racers have more than one guy for that job. It's what do you want out of the quarterback position? Do you want a guy that's going to hit the home run? Do you want a guy that's going to be able to scramble out of the pocket? Do you want a guy that's just going to be able to hit the hitch and go and convert on third and four? You know, that's the decision that this team has to make, and it might be – I don't want to put too much of an onus on it, but I think this team knows it's one of the bigger decisions they have to make this season.
Another addition to the staff, too, that we found out about, and that is Katie Humphreys going to be a member of the football coaching staff.
He is. We haven't gotten an official press release on that, but Mitch Stewart said it is an official word and an official go. Katie Humphreys will be the running back coordinator. Obviously, as a former quarterback of Murray State, the highest, you know, most decorated alongside Casey Brockman, and one of the best to statistically play in the Ohio Valley Conference, is going to be helping out on the offensive side of the ball. I understand he's not a running back, but he spent a considerable amount of time with running backs, having to coordinate those offensive schemes over the last few years. So congratulations to KD again. When Murray State announces that officially and things like that, we'll see how that continues to unroll and unravel and what sort of role he'll play in this offense. But, you know, I mean, he's a guy that has spent the last 2 or 3 years identifying talent for the team and trying to put together an offense that moves down the field. Why not get him on the offensive side of the ball? I think it's a home run hire, and KD stays home. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't either. We'll have a lot more on that as Ed and I will both be down there next week in Nashville, talk with various coaches, some of the players, and get a lot of new information. Ed, I appreciate the visit and look forward to chatting with you next week.
Not a problem. Thanks, Neil.
That is Ed Marlowe of the Paducah Sun. We'll have another show tomorrow.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.